everybody. Welcome to the Open Mic Comedy Podcast. I'm your host, Mark. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. This podcast is here for people on the open mic comedy circuit, whether you're a comedian, an MC, a promoter, a tutor, in fact, anybody who has any involvement in this industry. Even comedy fans who really do enjoy spending their time in pub basements watching the possible stars of the future. And if you're thinking, I could do that, then this podcast will give you the inside track on what to expect on this crazy circuit. Today's guest is someone who started their comedy journey during the pandemic, made the decision no virus was going to stop him. So Zoom gigs happened. But soon after we were free again, he hit the physical circuit hard. 225 gigs later, graduating to paid spots around the country, starting out one of the most popular nights on the London comedy circuit at the Camden Eye, and now tackling the German comedy circuit over in Düsseldorf. This intro could go on forever, so let's get into it. Please welcome to the stage, Dominic Barrell. Hello.
Hello. Lovely to be here. Long time listener, first time caller.
Was that intro accurate?
Yeah, it's very nice. Maybe too nice. I can't question anything there.
You could damage the reputation as we go through. So yeah, I mentioned you decided to become a comedian during the pandemic. Why?
Good question. It was, so I think I'd always wanted to do it. It was my dream to do it, I'd say. I never thought I would ever do it. I don't have any background in kind of being on stage or acting or performing or anything like that. In all the like school plays and nativities, I was always like street seller number six. So I never thought of myself on stage. And I was thinking back, I used to go swimming at university, and whilst I was doing, I just do lengths, and to keep me going, I would like swim and be like, in my head, imagine if I was like a stand-up comedian and these are the stories I would tell.
Yeah.
So it was there in the back of my mind. And I guess there were two things. There was Next Up did like a comedy festival online during Zoom. I don't know if you ever saw it. It was great because there was nothing to do. But also I was watching it being like, they're just talking from their room and they're getting no like audience interaction. So having then done it, I know how awkward it was. But
yeah,
I was kind of like, this isn't like, this is entertaining, but it's not like super funny. And it made it seem more accessible. And I think that was the kind of medium term cause. And then the short-term cause was we were just let out for a bit to go during lockdown, and I was playing football with a mate and we were cycling back home, and he's one of the nicest friends that I've got. I think he basically just laughed at everything I said on the cycle home, which probably put that into my mind that, oh, I'm really funny. And then whilst I was having a shower, it just, loads of things just hit me. I was like, I'm going to write a stand-up set.
Okay.
And then whilst I was doing that night on Facebook, a pop-up came up for an Angel comedy course.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is fate.
Facebook is always listening.
Exactly. So it was, in my head, it was fate, but it was just Mark Zuckerberg's algorithm getting me. And then I did the course, and still on Zoom, our showcase was on Zoom. But then people just started asking me, they were like, oh, how's the comedy going? And then it just became my thing. And I feel like a lot of comedians I speak to have this, but it becomes your thing. And then it's so hard to give up, even when you're not enjoying it, because this is what you do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know how long it's been. Over 2 years later, I'm still, maybe 3 years now. Yeah, I'm still here.
No, that's amazing. And Zoom didn't put you off, or just gave you the appetite to get out there and do it in person.
So that was the thing. My first 20 gigs were all on Zoom. And if I'd get one or two laughs during a set, I'd be like, that was pretty good, actually. But you had nothing to compare it to.
Yeah. So I guess, so that was back in, so that was in around 2000 then, I guess.
Yeah, towards the end of 2000.
How did you find the transition then going from Zoom to the stage?
So that was it. So I had my first gig. I feel like I've had three first gigs. So one on Zoom and then one during lockdown where, so we were allowed to go to pubs, but do you remember we had to have a drink, you had to buy a substantial meal.
Yes, I remember that.
So I went to the Cavendish Arms and they had just got pizzas in. I don't know if they did this before, but they made it sound like a new thing. So you could buy a pizza, get a drink, but then you weren't allowed to take the pizza into the performance area.
Yep.
So you had to eat your pizza and have your drink before the show. And then everything was super segregated because of COVID. So you have like, there was probably like, let's say there were 10 comedians, there were like 20 people there, but all sort of sat really far apart.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't the best vehicle for comedy and getting laughs.
No, I bet.
So I did that. And that was loads better than Zoom. But then we went back into lockdown again. So did some more Zoom gigs.
Right.
And then when I finally came out and I'd probably been doing comedy, speech marks. I'd probably been doing it for like 6 months, I guess.
Yeah.
And so then my first gig to proper crowds, I was like a lot better than one would normally be on their very first gig.
Gotcha.
And then just I was the first person on, basically like the first week we were allowed to do stuff properly again.
Yep.
And I just think everyone was so happy to be out that the feedback I got was like so loud. It felt so amazing.
Yeah.
And I just like didn't sleep for a week afterwards. And I was like, this is incredible. And I've heard a few people on this talk about it, but it's so hard to catch that high again.
Yes. Yeah.
From the first one.
I don't know if I've found it yet. I've had a couple that have been very, very, very close. But that very first time you do it and you nail it and you kind of go, shit, I can do this.
Yeah.
It's that realization that, hold on a minute, I've made the room, there's 100 people in that room, and I've got really good feedback and noise coming back at me that people have enjoyed it. And everyone you actually end up showing that clip to is like, that was really good, really good. But now I look back on it and go, it weren't bad. But technically, I feel a lot better now. But it's that, give me that feedback and that rush again.
Yeah. Oh, my God. If I look back at my third first gig that went amazingly, it was awful. Like, the content was awful. I think just everyone was so happy to be out. But also on the transitioning, what I've just remembered was quite funny, because when you're doing a Zoom gig, you basically tell a joke and then you have to wait for about 2 seconds for the laughter to start, and then you carry on because you can't talk over other people laughing, because then the sound goes and it's all a bit of a nightmare. So that was such a weird thing, to tell a joke and have that within a second to have laughter. It was like, whoa, that's too that's too quick.
So I guess we're kind of touching on it really at the moment, is best and worst moments on stage. So what is it in a physical form, I guess, what is the best moment you've had? Even if it's not a complete gig, it's just a moment that you look back on and go, I enjoyed that. I got that. That was good.
I've been fortunate to have lots of really good moments. Unfortunately, it probably doesn't get better than that first one.
Yeah.
I don't think it's ever going to be as good as that. I think I had a really nice show at the Bill Murray where they even laughed at like the setups, and it was just like so nice to have that at like a, and the way that venue is set up, it's like a really dark room, everyone's really tightly packed, like all the focus is on the stage, everyone's really it's just built perfectly for a really good comedy night, and it was just so fun to perform there. That felt really good, and that was the last gig I did before I moved to Germany, so that was a really nice way to come out. In terms of bad ones, I just had one before that Bill Murray one that I was really looking forward to. I'd had a week I'd done two Comedy in Your Eyes, where I'd had like applause breaks,
nice,
and I was feeling really really great. And then like 2 days before that Bill Murray one, I did the Beat the Blackout, and it went so awfully. And then I was like, I don't want to do comedy anymore. So yeah, gongs have always been my weakness. Everyone says you can't take them personally, but I take them so personally. How can you not take it personally when someone's literally saying, I don't want to listen to you anymore. Fuck off.
If you've listened to this, you know you've heard my little bits on the gongs and stuff like that. But yeah, I keep trying not to talk about them, but they're really hard not to talk about, because they are an integral part of especially the London scene. And I know it's coming a lot more with Manchester and Liverpool and stuff like that. But yeah, they're a beast unto themselves, I guess.
Yeah, and
yeah, I completely get you. My probably worst gig was the Blackout. I did it once, and I didn't beat it, but I got to like 4.5 minutes, and I was so chuffed.
Yeah,
so chuffed. And in my head, it's like, well, the numbers can only go up. You forget it's like 9 months later, and it's a whole different audience, and you're actually doing a different set.
Yeah,
and then you go on, and I was on. It was, I had the whole front third wetting themselves, laughing out loud on the 2 minute mark. And the lights flashed and it went card, card, card. I was just like, I was on the stage, like frozen. It's like, this can't happen because people were laughing. But I think it was those three card holders had just got it in their head at that moment in time before that happened. I'm not interested anymore. And there are people coming up to me after saying, I need to know what the next line was. You left us on such a cliffhanger. That was so out of order. I'm just like, I don't know what to say. Not my fault.
it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it's whether they might be enjoying it, but they just feel the pressure of they hear someone behind go gong, and they're like, oh, well, if they're not enjoying it, then I'm not enjoying it.
Yeah.
And it's horrendous, isn't it? Because it's just a few people's opinions or who can shout the loudest.
Yeah, I took it kind of personally that night as well. And I didn't take the 5 or 6 people that came up to me after saying that was really good, I wanted to see more, et cetera, et cetera. I took the 3 cards as the most defining part and gone, okay, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. And ironically, I went on the day the first episode of this podcast was released. And I was thinking, oh, that'd be a great story to tell in the later ones. You know, I've done it. I've got finally beaten it, etc. And it was like, I can't give up this now because I've just started this little side project. Something's going to keep me going. But no. Well, we won't talk about gongs anymore because they're too distraught. Too much of a...
I did want to talk about my... So my actual worst one was a gong. It was like the biggest mess I've ever seen in terms of a gig. It was a top secret comedy gong show. I don't know if they still do it, but it was also on the day of the Euros final when England were playing Italy.
Oh no.
And it was in the afternoon. Everyone was boozed up. The MC who was on was literally like, I want you like hunting I want you out there, or what's the phrase? Just basically, I want you to be bloodthirsty. I want you, if you don't like the look of someone, gong them off. Some person took the day off when they saw an email about it, drove from outside of London, got on, didn't even say anything. They just gonged him off because they didn't like his shirt. It was brutal. So I went on. I started off by, so back at the time, my opener was, I would say, I'm half English, half Spanish. My name is Dominic Luis Miguel Borrell Zarza Martinez. And then I'd keep carrying on. And basically the joke is, the long form joke of it is that just I had a completely different name on my Spanish passport than on my English. And halfway through that, someone just shouted, "Fuck off home." And then I replied, "Don't worry, mate. I'm Spanish, not Italian." And which was probably even worse than what he said. And then everyone just gonged me off after that. And that was it. And I was like, that was awful.
I sympathize. When you just said it was on the day of the Euros finals, thinking, please tell me it wasn't at midnight. Because, God.
Yeah.
It would just, they just want comedians to fight each other more than anything else, I think. Yeah. So we'll try and tell some jokes.
The MC was really riling up the crowd. At no point was he ever like, give them a joke just to see what they're like. He was just like, no, fucking get them off. We've got 600 acts on today. If you want to see the football, you're going to have to get them off.
Oh, that's encouraging. You just feel like a jester then, don't you?
Yeah. It was just meat. We were just comedy meat.
Yeah. I'm retiring from the gong scene for a while. I'll tell you that for a fact.
The frustrating thing is, if you want to play at the big clubs, that's what you have to do, really.
If you want to perform at them as have the experience of being on those stages. Yeah. I'm not sure they're as key as, you have to beat a gong show to get a proper gig somewhere else kind of thing. I think
it's the fastest way to do it.
Yeah, potentially. But I think it's also the fastest way to destroy your own inner soul. So you want to juggle the balance of those. I mean, I know somebody who's actually a previous guest on here who done King Gong. He's now a signed artist. He's on the same bill as some of the biggest names in comedy, and he can't get past 30 seconds on King Gong. So he's got to the point where he doesn't bother anymore, and he keeps having the urge to go back, but friends keep saying to him, "What are you trying to prove?" It's like, it's a fair point. He doesn't need to do it, so don't do it.
It's a different art form completely. The style of jokes.
Yeah, and completely.
Yeah. So, you can definitely get on like the big shows through other mediums. But it's not for me. But I genuinely speak to people who are like, oh, yeah, it's just a gong. So I didn't really care. And I'm like, I wish I had that level of.
Yes.
Yeah. That armor that they've got.
Yeah, I think the one tip I've always now said, I might have said it on here before, is that if you're going to do a gong show, make sure you've got another gig lined up within a day or two. So if it does go wrong, you can go back to doing what you know you're good at and what you'll be accepted as, and you don't end up dwelling and losing a bit of confidence. Because I literally sat there for like a week going, I'm not sure, really not sure about this anymore. And I had to wait a week before I had a gig that went decent, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm back in the game. My head's in it. I'm ready."
That is the one good thing I'd say about. There's lots of good things, but that is a really good thing about the London open mic circuit, is that you have to book gigs in advance, and there's so many that if you have a really bad gig, it would be easy to just be like, "Right, I'm not doing this again." If you didn't have another one planned in, but you probably have three more that week, so you just have to get on and do it. And then,
so that
then it comes
to,
back.
So that kind of brings us on to the comedy in your eye, you've mentioned that already. That has to be the most oversubscribed entrance form I think I've ever seen. I'd love to know what the numbers are behind it, because hey, I'll put my hands up, I've said it before, is I've applied every single month since April last year.
Wow.
I've nothing. I know, I understand you're completely oversubscribed. But I was talking to other people randomly at a couple of gigs and said, have you ever managed to get on? And like, no, not yet, not yet. And they've been going like 2 or 3 years. And it's like, it's hard, isn't it? But it is. I mean, I guess the location, the way it's marketed as well, I think is very good, because it doesn't look like an open mic. I mean, I'm not even sure if you would class it as an open mic. You tell us.
Yeah, I think that was that's how I really wanted to set it out at the start, is that, make it look as professional as you can. And when we started it, we were only into like live gigging for probably about 3 or 4 months. So we didn't have the contacts. We were rubbish. But if you want to sell tickets, you've got to make it look good. And we were really lucky that one of the team is a really good designer, and has done all the amazing graphics for it. And that side of making it look professional was like all done by him. And
yeah,
I think you just have to think about, when trying to market it to people who are buying it, why would you choose this show?
Uh-huh.
And if you look at it, and so if you'll notice, we don't advertise who's playing.
No.
Because I think and I see lots of nights that put up the different squares and who's performing, and I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. But as a normal person, if you look at it and go, I don't know any of these people, in my head, I would be like, well, I'll go watch somewhere where at least I know one of the people, or I've heard of them, so I know it's going to be of a sufficient level. So we try and not advertise it in that sense. And then when you see on there's so many things to do in London, and when you see on the Instagram that says an open mic,
yeah,
I just think, would someone actually? Maybe if you're in a pub having a drink and they're like, we've got some open mic comedy upstairs, people will be like, oh yeah, that's a fun, like, spontaneous thing to do. But to book an open mic comedy show 3 weeks in advance, maybe it does happen. I know in Edinburgh, there's so many really supportive punters out there who just want to support comedy and give people a chance. But I think there's a lot of people who just have worked hard that week and want an evening that they know that they're going to enjoy. And so it's just, trying to do that. Is it an open mic? I guess not really. It is in the sense that I do want to keep doing the forms, so that it's open for everyone to apply to. And we do watch the videos. We do read the like comedy CVs that people write in. Mm-hmm. Eventually people will get their chance, but we're getting over 500 people every month. And so every month we're getting even better comedians applying, because we'll have had like a big comedian on and they'll have posted it on their Instagram, and then other people will see that and be like, why am I not performing there? So we're getting better and better acts. And also, I think it's really important, because in the first 6 months or so, we kind of created like a little community of acts who, like, when no one wanted to do the show, they were there, that always came, they always brought people. And you want to still be loyal to those people as well who helped us out. Like, I remember I was looking back at some of the lineups we had, and one of my friends who I did a comedy course with, I booked her three out of four shows in the first month. And then the second month tried to do the same. And she was like, I really like the gig, but can I only do one this month? And I fast forward 2 years later, from the feedback I get, I don't think anyone would turn down that supplied 3 gigs in a month for Comedy yeah. in Your Eye.
I guess it's I guess I don't know, when you do some of the same gigs so often, you sometimes feel like you're in front of the same crowd, and I guess it's part of your head that goes like, some of these people have probably heard some of these jokes before, and you start thinking, and am I going to get a genuine reaction from what I'm actually going to say now? But no, 500 applications per month is what you guys look at the moment.
Yeah.
Wow. That's, I don't know. I kind of guessed it would be something like that, but when you hear it said, it's like, yeah, I get it. Cause I guess however many spots there are per night, you're what, 3 nights a week now, I think. 2 or 3 nights a week.
Yeah, 3 nights a week. Yeah. We've also, we used to have 12 acts on every night, and now that's been reduced to seven. So yeah. So that also means that there's fewer opportunities, and there's more longer sets now than shorter sets.
Yeah.
So again, that makes it harder for newer comedians to come in. But I would say just keep applying. We will get round to you at some point. But it's a challenge.
Oh, I can understand it. You look at, it's when you see the bigger nights and stuff like that, and they're always oversubscribed. You know that when you get that opportunity, it's time to take that opportunity. I guess it's a bit like the Angel stuff, isn't it? You know, you apply every quarter, and you put your name in the hat, and for those next 3 months, and then you just leave it. And the moment you get the chance to do it, you're like, okay, I'm not going to do this every quarter. I'm going to probably do this maybe once a year, maybe twice if I'm lucky. So you try and make those opportunities count for yourself rather than think of them. They are, in theory, just another gig. But as you may remember, when you're on that open mic circuit at the lower levels, those gigs are the ones that you kind of aspire to a bit more, because you see the clips online, you see the kind of crowd that's going to be there, and you kind of go, okay, I need to make sure that I do follow the rules. I do keep to the time. I get the laughs when I expect them, and I'm not a twat.
Yeah.
And, you know, first, I've done Angel once, and yeah, it just took everything to a different level. You see the quality of the acts on the stage, and the fact that I was like, when I walked in, I said to the guy, I said, so what should I, where do I, is there a place I sit or something else, you know? And he said, in the half you're in, make sure you're in the side room, because we don't want you walking out from within the crowd, because it's distracting and it's not professional looking. You're like, yeah. And when you look at the other gigs you've done that week, you know, you sat with your mate and gone, oh shit, I'm in a minute, I better move. And you kind of realise that there's an open mic scene and a practice ground, but then there's also a next level up, and being aware that's a next level up can, I don't know if it'll open up doors for you, but it'll give you that little bit more experience. And if it goes well, that more confidence that you can take forward and improve elsewhere, I think.
Yeah. With our one, and like the Angel one, just anywhere that has a proper crowd, that is a different test to doing bringer shows.
Yeah.
Because a good bringer show will have lots of people that they're comedians' mates, and they're there to be supportive of their friend, so they're there in a laughy, engaging mood. So it's a much more supportive crowd, and they'll laugh at a lot of your things, whereas these people are here on, like, they want to have a good time, but also they've paid a bit of money, and they want to be impressed as well. So I think it's a different test, and it's something that will make you stronger. I absolutely love Angel and everything they do, and I think if anyone's starting a night, like looking at Angel is the, I'd say, like, the best sort of format to try and imitate and do everything that they do, because they run everything so well. And it's such a great, their ideology of like giving new acts a go, I think is so nice. And I still remember, you mentioned that little side room. I remember getting so excited about that and being like, it was the first time it wasn't just coming up from a seat in the middle of the audience. And I was like, whoa, it's a green room.
it's a cupboard, but it's just you are in your head, you are an act because you are separated from the audience, if you know what I mean. I think that's very much a nice little touch that they have, and how they put that on. That's not to say that others don't do a good job and with stuff, but it's got that little bit of a it's like the first time you ever step on like a, if you've been like you have stepping on the stage up the creek, you know, you walk into that room and kind of go, I'm a absolute pain in the backside for getting to gigs early. I don't know why I do it. I just always do it. And the first time I walked into up the creek, it was like I was the only punter or comedian there at the time. And I just walked into the main room and I've immediately gone, I've looked at the chairs and I've gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 10 seats. There's 6 rows. That's 3, 2 wings, 1 back. There's these chairs. And I'm like, that's 200 odd people there. And then you see the stage and you see the logo and in the lights. And you're kind of like, well, this feels different. It's just got something else about it. And having gaining that experience and being able to do that, I don't know. It must be like a footballer that's used to playing on the lower leagues, and then they get the chance to play at the Emirates or Old Trafford or wherever else, and it's just like the pitch is like a carpet, no divots, it's perfect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And the changing rooms, they're not like school changing rooms. They're like.
But so, I don't know if you want to reveal this or not, but famous names across the stage that you've had on Comedy in Your Eye.
Famous names. Who have we had? We've had Lou Sanders twice.
Cool.
That's been a really good one. She's been amazing. We had like a 1 year anniversary show. And so we wanted to book someone, like book a professional, and we had her on that. And she was amazing. And then she thought of us when she was about to do her Live at the Apollo set recently, and then was like, Can I get 20 minutes to practice, like a few days before that? So we were like, obviously, yes. And then like last week or a couple of weeks ago, we had Felicity Ward as well come pop in and do a show there. Those are, I'd say, probably the two biggest. Oh, and I guess he's super big now, but Vigo Venn did it a few times. And he always absolutely destroyed the room. And we were supposed to have him on a couple of shows after Britain's Got Talent, but he had to politely decline.
I bet. So now you've jumped the English Channel and now in Germany. You've created Comedy in Your Eye Germany, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
So how does that differ from the UK scene? Or how does Germany as a whole differ from the UK comedy scene? And how is the night any different, or is it just like a copy and paste? Or
so I think with Germany, firstly, Berlin is I've heard like a really good place to gig. And there's lots of English speaking gigs every night and a paying audience who are really up for it. I'm on the complete other side of Germany in Düsseldorf, where there's one. Before I set up, there was one show every 2 months in English in Düsseldorf.
Yeah.
And then maybe a couple in Cologne, which is a city nearby. So and probably in terms of comedians in the area, we're all in a WhatsApp group together, and I'd say there's maybe like under 20 people in there. I haven't actually counted, but that's my vibe.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really challenging area because there's people who've been going for like a year, but they've probably done like 10 gigs or something like that, which is, if you saw someone that had 3 years experience in London, you'd be like, oh, you've probably done like hundreds of gigs. And they might be like, no, I've done 30. But so it's few and far between, but the crowds in terms of numbers are amazing. They're not as like leery and loud as English crowds, but they're super supportive, really polite. The only heckler I've seen was an English guy. and it's just really nice. Like the first open mic I did when I got here was in Cologne. It was an open mic. They charged €12 for a ticket.
Wow.
And there were 140 people in there.
Jesus. That's some going, isn't it?
The first person went on and for 7 minutes talked about how he wanted to use his daughter to catch paedophiles. And it got, understandably, it got no laughs for seven minutes, but they still like applauded at the end. And then I was on next. And in my mind, I was like, that was awful. But does that mean that German audiences don't laugh at anything?
Yeah.
But then I went on and it was fine. And it was really cool. But there's such a big appetite here. And it was quite nice not having to regularly run a show. But then I saw such a lovely space in a British themed bar over here.
Okay.
And I was like, this would be perfect for a comedy night. Spoke to the owner. He was really up for it. And then we did a show in October. It sold out like 3 months in advance without me even having to, apart from just putting it on Eventbrite and our website, I didn't have to do any marketing. And I was like, this feels like a no-brainer. But it's quite funny because here, like, it's super easy to sell tickets, but it's like impossible to get acts because there aren't enough.
Oh, okay.
Especially of like of the quality that I want my night to be.
Yeah.
There's some really good acts, but like you just don't have the practice ground, and they're doing it in a different language, and it's a big challenge.
Yeah.
And there are some good ones, but in terms of like doing an opening and closing 20, it's more of a challenge.
Yeah, I bet. So do you run that? Is that a monthly thing or is it a weekly?
It's a monthly thing. Just purely, it's so hard trying to get acts. So I'm like flying them in from England, getting them in from other countries, other cities. But it's cool. It's nice. And they've been really on board with it. And when we started Comedy in Your Eye, we had a little twist to the night where there was an inflatable eyeball and a list of topics.
Yeah.
And if any of the comedians mention any of those topics, the eyeball lights up behind you. And then at the end of your set, you have to do a forfeit, like a 20-second improv forfeit.
Yeah.
And we stopped doing that in London because when I went to Germany, none of the other MCs would do it.
Right. Okay.
So it seemed odd that on the description it said we were doing it and then we never did it. But I've brought that back for the German night. And for the first couple of nights, I was so bad at doing it because I was so not used to doing it that I completely forgot to like people or to do the forfeits. But the last couple have been really good.
So how does that... So you pick a couple of random topics that you think may come up and then you just... It's like, I guess it's a thing of scrolling through Twitter and looking at what's current, what's going on in the last couple of days and going, oh, yeah, somebody's talking about Prince William. Let's chuck that name in the hat and see what happens. And then somebody inevitably comes on and goes, heard about William doing this. And it's like, right, that's it. You've got to do something.
Exactly.
And what did the forfeits usually involve?
Oh God, it would be I try and make it about their set, so something linked with their set, and maybe something they could use the audience for. So, for example, if they were talking about dating apps, then I'd often get the comedian to then pick someone that we've spoken to earlier in the show in the audience and be like, write them a dating app like profile for the next 20 seconds, and that would often go down pretty well. And I'd sometimes get on, because I'd never tell anyone. I'd tell them where they were on in the lineup, because that the way the Comedy Virgins do it, by not telling you the lineup, I think is so cruel.
I hate that.
It makes me so nervous.
Yeah, my first show at Comedy Virgins was turned up, and a friend of mine had done it the week before, and I said, oh, how did it work? He said, oh, I just went up to the bar and said, you know, I'm new here. And they were like, so we'll put you somewhere in the middle or whatever. So, okay, that seems fine. And then when I went up to the bar and did it, I said, oh, you just get drawn out of a hat. I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, this is my second ever gig. You know, please be kind. Yeah, help. And I sat down with my mate and I looked at him and I went, you know what's going to happen, and I know what's going to happen. And yeah, number one out of the hat was me. And they even got my name wrong introducing me. And I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake, this isn't going to go well, is it? And no, it went absolutely awful.
Yeah, I think I'm all for like listening to the other acts. But just before you go on, you need to be able to prime yourself a tiny bit and make sure you get that opener coming out right.
Yep, completely. And I think the... I don't like the randomness. If you want to draw it randomly out of a hat, it's fine. But tell me beforehand. Just tell me. And then I know that, okay, the MC's doing their bit. I'm getting myself ready. I'm shitting myself because I'm still so early. And you look at the heart rate on the watch and you're like, that's 140 beats a minute and I'm just sitting down.
There's no way to do it.
No.
So we tell people when they're on. So like you're on number four in the first half, let's say.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't tell them. I wouldn't announce the whole lineup. So as a forfeit, I'd say for the next 20 seconds, please describe and welcome on the next act. And they'd be like, okay. Who is it? And I'd be like, your 20 seconds starts now.
I like that because there's a gig I've done a few times with the MC. In his crowd work, he doesn't ask you what you do for a living. He asks the person next to you what they think you do for a living. I think that's quite clever. So obviously, as long as they don't know each other, but you know, what do you think this fella does for a living? Electrician? What do you do? I'm a banker. Oh fuck!
That's good.
I think I like the little nuances and stuff like that. And you always look for them in, I guess, in your own comedy, whether it's an MC or in a set and stuff like that. You think, how can I use something, but not copy it? But I don't know. And it's such a hard thing, I think, to. You can be so envious of some people's material and you do that thing of, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I get that?
As soon as you said you described what that MC was doing, I was like, oh, that would have been good.
You can get away with it in Germany, though. But if I do it over here and it gets filmed, it's be like, hey, you're just copying Dez. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Sorry. It's just so inspirational.
but you know
and everyone else knows, and it's like, no, don't do that, don't copy. So I guess are you now permanently in Germany now? I don't want to probe too much, but if you want to say, I assume you travel, you're now in Germany for work, as in a day job, and then you've decided to do comedy in your eye Germany whilst over there.
So I live here. It was for my wife's job, And I still do my English job, but remotely. Okay. And so because of that, I have to come back to the office once a month for a week in England, in London. So I can, I still got sort of an eye in on the comedy circuit, but a very, very small one.
Yeah.
So yeah. So because I'm here for 3 weeks of the month in Germany. Yeah. And there's not enough gigs. I was like, and there was the perfect opportunity to do it. I spoke to someone, one of the first gigs I did in Düsseldorf, a girl ran it and she did it. She had me on to open and it was a really nice gig. And then I was like, oh, are you going to do some others? And she's like, oh no, I'm finding it quite hard. And I was like, well, if you need some help, then I'm happy to help. And she was like, oh, it's not the running of it or selling tickets. It's just finding the acts. And then she ended up, she just stopped doing it. And I was like, that gave me an indication that there was like an appetite. And yeah, so that's why I've started doing it over here.
Yeah, cool. I love the entrepreneurial side. I want to do something. And I guess it's, you know, it gives you the opportunity to get on stage yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Otherwise, you'll be sitting around going, writing more material for another week in London. See how many gigs I can cram in London.
Yeah.
When you go back and stuff like that. So with regards to material, I guess, one of my favorite questions has always been, what is your favorite joke? Maybe not your best joke, but your favorite joke. How it was born and how it's evolved over time, if it's changed at all.
My favorite joke. Interesting. I hate all my jokes. not as in I don't like doing them, but I don't know. Once you've done them so many times, they're just like words. And whenever I say them, whenever I'm about to go on, I'm like, what am I doing? None of this is funny. Like, what? They're not going to laugh at any of this. And then you do it. And then they do actually quite like it.
Yeah.
But it's just that belief thing. Because it's no longer a surprise to you. My jokes are quite long form as well. As in, like, they're sort of bits rather than individual jokes.
Yeah.
My favorite bit, which doesn't work in Germany, so now whenever I go back to London, I really look forward to doing it, is basically around, so it's a story that's just, it's made up, but the facts from it came when I was chatting to one of my friends who's a doctor. And he was telling me about how he was working. He was doing a placement working with kids. And that when they come in for like very minor surgeries and they have to be sedated for said operation, they're not allowed to give them general anesthetic because it can be like too risky for kids. Right. So they give them ketamine. And then as soon as he said that, my mind just went and I was just like,
yeah.
Just be like, because they're small, do you only make them try a half and see how they feel? And it's like, afterwards, are they then, or like, do you start playing minimal techno? And just in my head, I just like wrote all these different things like there and then and turned that into a set. And I still really enjoy doing that. And it was one of the easiest bits that I've written, because as soon as I don't know why, but just so many different things came into my head as soon as he mentioned that, and it was quite easy to structure something that I then wrote like a 7-minute thing on that I've now kind of crunched it down to about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And in London it tends to work really well. Germany not so much. Which weirdly, I did it once and it did work really well. And someone came up to me at the end who was a doctor and was like, in Germany, we don't give them general anesthetic. It's always ketamine. So it should work better. But...
yeah. No, it's, I guess that's a sort of joke and mini story where you can add toppers onto toppers onto toppers.
Yeah.
And it's almost never ending, because you could just look at that, what happens within that circuit, if you're into that, and play on various things that just keep building and building and building on top of the joke, and different silly scenarios and stuff. Like you say, the techno music, and then how do you make them come down and stuff like that?
Yeah,
you can just, it's almost like a never ending thing. But I think that's quite cool. So if you were another nice little obvious question you've probably heard before, if you were to become super famous, you're about to do your live at the Apollo set on the BBC, you've got your 20 minutes all set up, and then the producers come to you and say, what walk-on music do you want? What do you pick?
So, yeah, great question. I've been trying to think about it. So I've had a few in my mind in the past, but right now I'm not super sure what it would be. So I used to have dyed blonde hair, and then I'd have a joke that said that I look like Eminem if he lived in a bin. Because of my scraggly beard as well, and that always used to work pretty well, but my wife made me get rid of it. So if I had that, if I had that blonde hair, I'd have My Name Is by Eminem.
Yeah.
And I would like to bring it back. So watch this space. But then I don't think I've even talked about it on the pod, but I'm half Spanish. I did say it about the, the passport joke. So I'd maybe have something like that if the set was going to have a lot of Spanish stuff in, but often nowadays I don't really talk about it that much. But if it did, then maybe like Live in La Vida Loca or something like that, just to prime the audience.
Yeah.
Maybe something, yeah, that. Or, and then when I was younger, I used to love wrestling.
Okay.
And I used to have a intro song, which was Creed, My Sacrifice.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Which, that would just be a little, like, nod back for myself. It would have nothing to do with anything else. But I'd just be like, I didn't become a wrestler, but I did get a walk-on song, and it was what I had when I was younger.
Oh, that's so cool.
Maybe that.
Yeah, I like the variety rather than, like, just a one answer. It's obviously going to depend on mood and what the set's going to be based around and stuff like that. And there's that thing where you don't want to make it too in your face to then, if you're a somber comedian, where you drop the atmosphere like a stone.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was Hassan on an episode spoke about coming onto some kind of Arabic music. And I thought that'd be quite funny. It does kind of set the scene for him, and then when he comes into what he does, you're just like, oh no, it's slightly different to what he is, and it's got the contrast. But that's quite fun, I think. So, with your time on the open mic circuit in the UK, because you've travelled all over, and you're primarily based in London, but you've done lots of gigs all over the place. So, how do you find the London circuit different to outside of London, in effect?
So comparing it to Germany, I think there's few and far gigs in between, which means you probably only get on stage once a month,
mm-hmm.
if you're lucky. Which I remember being in London and being like, I haven't gigged for 2 weeks. I feel so rusty.
Yep.
I'd like get on stage and be like a quivering wreck. And whereas now, having not gigged for a month, I feel like a bit rusty, but it's doable.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And I think the biggest difference is whenever I meet comedians around here, they all look so happy because they're so excited to be doing this gig because they haven't done one for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Whereas going around London, everyone's like, oh, yeah, had a really bad gig last week. Yeah, I'm doing 6 gigs this evening. And there's that. It's like everyone's like a physical sigh, basically, of having to do this grind where, like, you'll have some really amazing gigs and you'll feel really good afterwards. But often you've had a whole day of work. you're knackered, but you booked this gig 2 months ago and you don't want to let down the promoter.
Yeah.
And you do it, and then it's good fun, but it's a lot. And I think it is really nice here that we can actually go out and enjoy it, because there's always big crowds. Often we get paid, and everyone's really supportive in the community. As I said, everyone's in a WhatsApp group and everyone's really nice to each other. If anyone drops out of a gig and they're like, oh, I'm ill, like 20 people will then reply, oh, I hope you get better. Yeah. And it's just like to me, just that seems really odd how nice everyone is to each other. Maybe that's an English thing. I don't know. Yeah.
But you've performed at, outside of London, within the UK as well, though, haven't
you? Yes.
So how do you find that difference from London in terms of anything?
I think it's easier to get better gigs outside of London, for sure. So I definitely would encourage anyone to do it. I can't drive, so it means getting a big old train somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lot nicer. And then I've done Hot Water Comedy and Beat the Frog in Liverpool and Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowds there, actually, yeah, you're talking about what my best moment in comedy was. The only thing that's got close to that first gig was doing Hot Water. Everyone was so up for it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And then even doing Beat the Frog, it was a gong.
Mm.
But everyone was there to enjoy comedy.
Yep.
So the only people who got gonged off were people who were really not doing very well at that point. And I think that's fair. If people aren't enjoying it, gong them off. But then the next person they really do enjoy. And I think, there's just maybe more appetite for it outside of London.
Because there's less of it. So when it crops up, it's definitely... I guess within London, you can go and see anything, any drop of a hat, any point, any day. You can go even multiple times a day. But if you're outside of London, you know, there's nights that come on that are once a month, once a fortnight, maybe even once a week, and people will make the effort just to go there because there's nothing else really. They don't want to make the trip somewhere else to do it. They make the effort. Because they actually want to be there rather than passing trade, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Especially if it's like in a town somewhere that has like once a month a comedy night. I know I spoke to one of my, someone I work with, an agency, and she's like, in her small village, they have a comedy night once a month run by like a really good comedian that I can't remember his name now. but like everyone gets excited about that. And they go every month, and that's really cool. I think Manchester and Liverpool has a lot more going on. But I think I wonder if people just get ground down by the way of life in London. It's very full on, and maybe you're not really in that much of a mood to laugh after a long day at work.
Yeah. I did. I remember, actually reminds me when you talk about that you have to get trains everywhere because you don't drive. But somebody once told me the biggest tip they could give any new aspiring comedian that wanted to get longer sets was to be able to drive. Because there's so many comedians out there that don't drive that some promoters will give you a spot if you drive a comedian to their show.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, yeah.
I don't see it as much now, but when I first started, there were loads of posts on the Facebook comedy forums that were like, need a London driver, need a London driver. I don't look at them that often these days, but are they still there? Okay. Yeah, there were so many opportunities. And I mean, it's a brilliant opportunity if you can do it, because you then get to do a 10 on like a pro bill. You get to meet these comedians. You'll spend a couple of hours with them in a car, learn from them, build those connections.
Yeah.
And it's a way of getting known.
It was kind of weird because I originally thought that the guy was talking like just tongue in cheek, and he's like, no, I'm serious. you look at the poster, you'll see they need drivers because so many comedians that are based in London just don't drive because they've never had a need to drive. And you're like, I guess it makes perfect sense. Whereas I'm from outside of London, it's like the first thing you did at 17 years old is what do you want for your birthday? Driving lessons, and it just happens that way, I guess.
Yeah. But
no.
Well, here's your chance then. Drive into London and drive out.
That's the problem. I can't do that because I've got family.
Yeah.
If I was 20 odd years earlier, I'd be all over it. But no. Family, wife, kids, commitments just means comedy gets happened when I can fit it in and that's it. I can't be a chauffeur for somebody else. Not unless it was for something really top draw. I'd love to do it, but you know, it's what I was. I mean, I still get nervous if I play somewhere new that I've never played before, and especially if it's a big place. I mean, I did Backyard's new act night earlier this week, and I just kind of walked into the room, and if you've only ever seen it on clips, what you see in the flesh is very different to what you see in the clip, the way the room is laid out and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still the palettes that are on that wall, and you kind of go, I'm still in front of that sign, and it's almost, I guess it could be classed as iconic as the Comedy Store, and even downstairs at the King's Head, you see the writing on the brick wall behind the Up the Creek lights. It's got those things to it, and you kind of think, don't fuck this up. Don't fuck this up. Ironically, I forgot the end of my set.
Nearly.
I played around with it, and somebody sent me a message after, said, I really enjoyed your set. I thought it was really good. I said, thank you very much. I said, it'd definitely be better if I don't forget it. She said, I thought it was part of your act. I was like, it probably should be. So it's quite fun.
The way Backyard, like, they're advertising, they've got Dave Chappelle there, which is, like, the acts that played there are incredible. And I lived for about 6 years before I moved to Germany in Bethnal Green.
Oh, okay.
So that was where I used to go watch comedy.
Yeah.
And so, that's such a cool place to go as a punter. And I've done that new act night as well. And so, so cool to play it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I remember the Dave Chappelle thing when he appeared there, because he came over, didn't he? I think it was a year or 2 years ago, maybe 2 years ago now, with Chris Rock. They were doing like a double tour, wasn't it? And I remember getting an email from Leicester Square Theatre going, Dave Chappelle tickets go on sale in 3 minutes. And I thought, well, every time I've had a Ricky Gervais one or something, I thought, if I go on there, I'm not going to get a ticket. Let's go too quickly. I got onto the Dave Chappelle link. I was like, okay, you're in the queue. And this is like 9:15. I'm thinking, it should be saying sold out. And then it clicked through. And I was like, how many tickets do you want? I was like, two. I was like, okay. And then I saw the price and I went, oh, that's why they're not selling out. They're 150 quid a pop.
What?
They were absolutely extortionate. I promise to you, I am not lying. I'm telling you the truth. He paid Backyard. The booking fees on the Backyard for that night were higher than the most ticket prices for a Backyard show. I'm sure they were 120 to 150 pound a ticket. And I know it's Dave Chappelle, and I know you're in a venue like that. I get it, and it would have sold out in the end. But going through and going, oh, I've got a chance to get two tickets, and he's like, they're asking for 350 quid. I was like, hey, that's not right. That can't be right.
Was it like a sofa at the back, unlimited drinks, unlimited admission to the museum?
Nope. I've never seen a ticket price for a comedy show like it. I think because I even think the tickets for the Chris Rock Dave Chappelle double header at the O2 were cheaper than those ones at the comedy clubs. Because I think he did like three in a night. Because I think he did, I think he did like Leicester Square early in the evening, did Comedy Store, and then he went on to do Backyard. So I don't think the Backyard one started till about midnight or something like that.
Wow.
So I guess if you get the chance to see somebody like that in a venue like that, it's cool. But just like, oh, that price, yeah.
Things, yeah,
it's at that time, it's like, okay, so I've got to factor in a hotel. Because there's no way I'm getting a train home. He's like, I can't do it. I can't justify it. As much as I'd love to, I just couldn't justify it.
The thing is, it's going to be so much better watching them in a smaller venue, but 150
quid.
Completely get it. I did see Chris Rock. I think it was Chris Rock did the Blackout. I don't know if it was last year or maybe like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah. He couldn't get gonged off, but but I remember just lots of comedians being like, I've just performed with Chris Rock.
I appreciate the getting to see an artist at work so close up and stuff like that. I mean, I went to see years and years ago, just before, I don't know if you remember Live 8 when it took place in London. One of the headliners was the Foo Fighters. And whenever the Foo Fighters come over to the UK doing a big show, they usually do a couple of warm-up shows. And I got to see the Foo Fighters in... It wasn't even Camden Underworld. It was somewhere far, far smaller. It was about 250 venue capacity.
Wow.
And, yeah, there really isn't a stage. There's a step. And, you know, there's a couple of security guards, but... You've got Dave Grohl walking through the crowd playing the guitar.
And that's incredible. Like,
but I paid 20 quid for that. You know, I didn't pay 150 quid, I paid 20 quid. And ironically, I'm going to see this Friday, and when this comes out, this will be way gone, but Green Day, two of their band members have got a band called The Cover-Ups. So they do. They just play purely cover songs, and they're over in London, and they played a show at the Highbury Garage on Tuesday, which is about a 350 venue capacity, I think.
Wow.
And I'm going to see them at the Club 100 on Friday, in front of, I think it's 250 people. And you look at the pictures of the room, and you're like, that's like a front room. I was like, how can you get that many people in there? But somehow they do. And, you know, it's one of those where if you're standing behind people, you're probably only ever a maximum of about six people back from the stage. And that's 40 quid.
So good. Those are the ones you don't forget. But that's the thing, when it's a smaller room, even though it's a more fun gig to go to, I assume that they're going to be cheaper. And it's more like a practice.
Yeah.
It's like a new material night thing. Like anything goes, it can be shit. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
It's just a practice.
Yeah, but the Dave Chappelle £150 a ticket was like, oh, no, thank you. I'd be funny. I mean, don't get me wrong, it'd be hilarious to see somebody like that turn up at like a G&B gig or something like that. But I think
if I ever become famous, I almost certainly won't, but I'll just try and pop into really random open mics.
Yeah. I've got a spot for me. I'll just do a five in the middle. I won't even take a headline spot. Just for a laugh. Oh, we've got this new act coming on. Please welcome to the stage. What the fuck?
Sam Campbell, who won the Edinburgh Best Show. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, he just like emailed me out of the blue being like, hey Dom, have you got a spot tonight at Comedy in Your Eye? And I'd never met him before. I've no idea how he knew who I was.
Yeah.
And we were like, yeah, definitely. Okay.
Come down.
He was just about to go on Taskmaster and
yeah.
I was like, for sure.
Cool. So I guess you're still technically part of the London open mic scene in that you come back over quite regularly then. So from your point of view, what's the one thing you'd like to see change on the open mic comedy circuit? If anything.
Yeah, it's hard. I think it would be what I really like about this scene in Germany is the fewer gigs. It'd mm-hmm. be nicer if there wasn't as much pressure to be doing so much to the point where like people still enjoy it. Like fewer gigs, but definitely gonna be a crowd. I really liked performing at Bringers, and I get the point of them yep. and why they happened, and Comedy in Your Eye started as them, but it'd be so much better if that wasn't a necessary evil.
Yeah.
And even if you just do one gig a week or one every 2 weeks, but there's going to be at least 50 people there, I think that would just be so much nicer. And I feel like that's probably the case in places outside of London.
Yeah. Where
not as many, but you get to do it in front of a proper crowd and you enjoy it. And it gives you that buzz to keep writing material and to travel yep. further. That's probably what I would change.
Okay. Fair enough. I think the Bringers are the, like you say, the necessary evil that if I have to, I don't want to perform just in front of a room full of comedians. Comedians and their friends is cool. Real audience is even better. But yeah, it's if that's the only chance you're going to get to perform, then I'll take it. I have to.
Yeah. Because when I first started, all the bad gigs I had, as in all the gigs that I didn't enjoy, were non-Bringers.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if it's a good or bad gig. You see the pictures they've uploaded and it looks like they've got an audience, but that was probably the one time they had an audience that they took loads of photos. And so you do it and it's empty and you're like, why am I spending my evenings doing this? This is yeah. awful. But then you do a Bringer and you're like, this is why I started doing comedy. This is such a great feeling.
Yeah.
I was fortunate that my wife was super supportive and she'd come to gigs with me. I had lots of friends that were willing to come watch as well, so I was able to do that. And I get not everyone has that support base, mm-hmm. but it's a much nicer way to start out in comedy. So for all the people being like Bringers are wrong, it's for me it's way better to do that than to just perform to no one or just yeah. comics.
No, I completely understand, completely get it. So I think we're kind of winding down this little chat. So as you've seen a couple of episodes before, you may remember what's coming up next. The Comedian's Challenge.
I wanted to suggest a twist as well.
I wonder if you're going to suggest a twist that somebody else has suggested, which is quite interesting, but go on.
Oh, maybe. I still have a few to catch up, but my twist is that I pick two.
Yeah.
And because you said you wanted a spot at Comedy in Your Eye.
Yeah.
I give you a spot at some point and you have to do that joke that I pick.
Deal.
At your Comedy in Your Eye spot.
Deal. Take me. That's yeah. fine.
Okay.
I'll do that. I thought you was going to suggest, somebody else suggested a really good idea actually. But because the way it started, it's a bit hard to do. You need to kind of cut and start again. Do you ever watch Diary of a CEO or listen to Diary of a CEO, the Stephen Bartlett?
I'm aware of it, but I've never listened to it.
What they have is they have a book at the end where the guest writes a question for the next guest.
Ah, okay.
So you could have this, you picking the joke for the next person, and then that person picks a joke for the next person. So you don't even pick your own joke.
That's a good idea. But I'm looking forward to this. So yeah. I need some new material anyway.
So just for those that may be first time listeners and stuff, this is what it's about. It's a book called The Little Book of Shit Jokes by Sid Finch. This is pages 5 to 95. And I ask every comedian that comes on to pick a number between 5 and 95. And on that page will be a shit joke, hence the title of the book. And I'd like them to perform it on stage, film it, and then tag us, collaborate with us on Instagram and get it out there, and just for a bit of fun. We've had a couple already so far that have turned out to be quite good fun. And I know there's a couple waiting in the wings to be released soon. So, yeah. So, Dom, do you want to pick a number between 5 and 95?
Cool. Can I have 26?
26.
Hopefully there's two on the page.
And there is two perfect on the page. And you can pick joke. Ah, okay. So you want.
So okay. I want to hear both, and then I'll choose which one is mine and which one's yours.
Oh, no, you can't do that. You pick one or two, and I'll take the other one.
Okay. Does that mean one of them's really bad?
I've only read the first part of the second one, so.
That makes me want to choose number one then.
Okay. Number one for you. At first, I refused to believe my mother was stealing from the motorway. But when I got home, all the signs were there.
I can rock that. I don't really understand what stealing from the motorway is, but...
Yeah. Well, this is the other thing is you can...
I guess the signs. Yeah, you're stealing the... That's the only thing you can.
Stealing the signs. But how would you steal from them? It may not be the motorway in your joke if you've got something in your set that's to do with something else.
My mum is very... She doesn't like to pay for things, so that could work quite well. Yeah, perfect.
She needs to nick signs, though. So we need to think about where she'd be stealing signs from. So, yeah, okay.
What's your joke?
Joke two. Why did the chicken cross the road? Beats me, but he was looking like he was up to something foul.
That is awful.
I wish I'd got the first one.
You have to open on that as well. I forgot to mention.
Okay.
No, it's fine. Let's see how you can work that in.
And fuck.
I was going to say, can you hold the page up to the screen? But it's so bad that I don't think you need to do that.
I don't know if you... I will send pictures so you can take a... Nice. You can actually see what somebody else has got as well.
Cool.
No, it's... Like I said before, I don't really edit much of these podcasts, so it's going to be in there. Why did the chicken cross the road? Beats me. But he looked like he was up to something foul. Yeah, I think I can work that into... yeah. See, this is the beautiful thing I think about comedy is that... I know where I can put that in my... I can open with that because I can lead into my first current setup joke that kind of would work-ish. It would be a complete, like, you've gone from this to this. But it's like, yeah, but there may be... My brain's already going, how can I seamlessly kind of, you know...
Yeah. Well, my advice would be not to open with that. That's probably the worst thing you
could
start
on. This is my first time. I've applied for this place for a year. So my first joke is going to be, why did the chicken cross the road? We'll see. No, I'll definitely give that a crack. Yeah. I like it. Thank you.
Nice. So did I mention it was the spot at the German comedy?
Were you flying me over? I did speak German for 2 years.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, when I was 11. So I can't remember a thing about it. I knew... where was it? I remember patterns more than anything. I think it was asking where the nearest train station was. Ekomazek and Besten Bahnhof Bitter. Something like that.
Nice.
I have no idea if that's even right. It probably isn't, and I probably insulted. I think you're the only person in Germany that listens to this, so according to the geographics. But hopefully, as there may be a few more that listen once they see your name and they're aware of you over there. That'd be quite cool. So, what's your socials and stuff like that that I'll put. In the description so people find you a bit more easily.
Sure. It's at This Is Domedy, like This Is Comedy, but with a D instead of a C because I'm Dom. And yeah, and follow at Comedy in Your Eye as well. To be honest, I don't do much social media stuff, so it would help me more if you followed Comedy in Your Eye.
Okay.
And great. Come to a show.
Definitely. And you can find us on Open Mic Comedy Pod on Instagram. We're on the W's at openmiccomedypod.com. Whichever platform you're listening to this on, please give it a nice 5-star review. And on Spotify, you can do a Q&A. So if you've got any questions for Dom, chuck them in there if you want. I don't know. Might help an algorithm somewhere along the lines. I don't know. But yeah, 5-star review would be nice. Don't worry about any of the others. They're pointless. And if you've got any friends that you know would like to listen to these kind of things, share it with them. Let them know. Any comedian friends. Any comedians that want to appear on this at any point, hit me up on a DM on Instagram and we'll look at scheduling some time. And until next time, keep being funny on the stage and see you soon.